Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, all right, and welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. You go to Facebook, you go to the search bar, you type in the Matthew Aaron Show, you click the little magnifying glass, it takes you to the Matthew Aaron Show, you click like, you become a part of the conversation. You can go to iTunes, and on iTunes you can subscribe to the Matthew Aaron Show, probably under the history section, and leave your pithy little comments, please, no bloviating. We are also at Stitcher with Adam Carolla and NPR and the BBC, and we're somewhere at the bottom rung of that. Where else are we at? I always forget. We're so many places, but the number one place to listen to the show is www.thematthewaaronshow.com. I think I just realized my nephew licked this microphone or something. Oh, God. Ugh. Okay, so today, Jonathan Katz. Jonathan Katz and I had a sit-down last week. I'm going to get right to it because it's going to take up pretty much the entire show. And what it does not take up, I will not be around for because I already heard the interview. I did it. I taped it. I was there. But you now get to hear it. You now get to enjoy it. See, it's good to be the king. What else is going on? Do I care about anything else going on? No, let's just get right to Jonathan Katz. Why not? Yeah, why not? Yeah, why not? Oh, by the way, the show yesterday, Paul Fusco and Dan Bukatinski. Wow. Great show. I'd give that a listen to if I were you. I'm going to have to sign off Facebook tonight because people are just stupid. Well, let's see here. Four quarters is better than 100 pennies. Hashtag friends. When you're comparing your friends to pennies and quarters, you need new friends. Okay, Jonathan Katz. Here we go. The Katz man and I. Where is this at? I got to find the interview. Do you want to hear it? You want to hear it. Here it is. All right, Matthew Aaron here, and I am here with the Dr. Katz, Jonathan Katz. How many people assume you're really a doctor or call you Dr. Katz all the time?
So many. It's embarrassing. Even my wife of 32 years still asks me to prescribe. But no, it's weird. In Newton, many people think I'm a shrink. And Newton is a town full of shrinks. I live in Newton, Mass, outside of Boston.
That's right.
Yeah. Where are you? What part of the world?
I'm in Chicago. I'm in the suburb of Chicago. So I'm not even – you're like outside of Boston. I'm in Downers Grove outside of Chicago. So
I lived in Chicago for a while.
Did you?
I had a duo called Sabasawa and Katz.
Okay.
I was Katz. And we performed in, I guess, on the north side of Chicago and in Old Town, and we never got paid, but we once got a sandwich.
So you performed over by Second City and where Zany's is at. I don't know if it was there at that time. I know Second City was. Second City's been in Old Town forever.
I didn't know anything about comedy in those days. I was trying to make a living as a musician.
Didn't you start out with your stand-up? I mean, a lot of your early stand-up, you used the guitar. Am I wrong?
Right. Yeah, I was a guitar act, which is kind of like low on the food chain.
Yep.
I think it's a prop act, then a guitar act. And one night I was sharing the bill with Adam Sandler, and the guy who booked us said, "I don't think you want to follow him."
Yeah.
That was great advice.
Was Adam really good back then? Like when you guys...
He was. He was a young guy. I think he was just starting to work on the road a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was doing music bits on stage too, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Because I remember reading a story about you. I want to say it was your first Letterman appearance or something, where they told you to, like, if you could drop the guitar. is that true? That's accurate?
Yeah, that was the deal, because this guy, Bob Morton, who used to produce the show,
yeah,
he saw me perform many times at the Improv in New York and said that David doesn't really like anyone to do anything but stand up if you're a comedian.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that
Did you ever
for the next 2 years, I had to let go of the guitar, and it was hard.
Yeah, I got to imagine it's hard because I did stand-up for years until I started doing this, and now I'm writing TV and movies and stuff. But in up until that point where I was doing stand-up, I mean, it's got to be difficult to have an act that is your own, which is you're using the guitar and you do funny songs and you tell some one-liners and you do some funny bits, and now all of a sudden you got to get rid of the guitar. Do you have to learn to be a stand-up like all over again, kind of?
Did. I mean, you know, I had a band before, you know, named Cat's Jammers we started in 79.
Yeah.
And we ended, I think, in 80. But we had an impact on the music scene in that 1 year.
Oh, wow.
And if you listen very closely to the songs of people like Randy Newman, The Stones, Bonnie Raitt.
I love Bonnie Raitt.
You can hear traces of Cat's Jammers in their music.
Oh, wow.
And that's total bullshit.
I was going to say, when I asked Bonnie Raitt, I go, listen, Jonathan Katz tells me, Bonnie.
I mean, I did get to meet her one night. Knew her drummer was married to a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And she was on the bill with Hall & Oates.
Oh, gosh.
And it was just so exciting to meet those guys. And Daryl Hall is one of my heroes.
Yeah, I love his show he has.
From his home?
Yeah, where he does it from his house and he has someone come in.
Yeah.
I watch it all the time. I think it's live from Daryl's house or something that simple. I don't even know. But yeah, I mean, I love that show. I love Daryl Hall. I love John Oates. When you said that, I'm like, Hall & Oates and Bonnie Raitt, that's a bill. That's a great bill.
Yeah. Well, I'd never seen them physically.
Yeah.
So I'm watching them walk away from me, and I honestly thought that Oates was his son, because he's very short.
Yeah, he is.
But he sure is good. He's such a superb vocalist.
Go ahead.
I've written songs in my life, and they're all at best mediocre. In fact, I'm coming out with another CD called Easy Listening, but not that easy.
That's good. I wanted to tell people Comedy Dynamics is releasing Dr. Katz Live. It's via digital audio on iTunes, Amazon, every other digital place that you can pick it up. And that's going to be October 21st, which I believe is Tuesday.
That's correct.
This is a live show you did in San Francisco. What's the festival that you did this at, or was it just a live show?
No, it's just a San Francisco Sketch Fest.
That's what it was.
But
yeah.
The live show differs than the animated show in a few ways, and the most significant is that I'm also in therapy.
I'm seeing
a therapist portrayed by the co-creator of the show, Tom Snyder.
If that blows my mind. Do people know that? I don't think people know that Tom Snyder co-created the show. What was the story behind that? Did Tom Snyder see you on Letterman or something and want to do something?
It's not the Tom Snyder you're imagining.
I know who, not the talk show host Tom Snyder. Let's clarify that for people. but I want to know, Tom Snyder, he's created a lot of shows, great shows. But what I was bringing up is Tom Snyder sees you on Letterman then and wants to do a show. How did this come about? The original Dr. Katz.
I think the first time he saw my stand-up was in a movie called Things Change, a David Mamet movie.
Yeah.
And I played a comedian named Jackie Shore. And then he found out that we were neighbors. He lived in Cambridge. I lived in Newton. We got together. He came over with his wife and kids. And I asked him if they ever had, I forget what the disease was. I think I said, I assume you've never had... Well, it wasn't Ebola because that hadn't been invented yet.
But it's good now.
But something awful.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
We started working together in the early 90s and haven't stopped, really.
I was going to say, because for our listeners, just to give you an idea of how great Tom Snyder is, he did home movies as well, I want to say. And that's
great.
A great little show. I want to also ask you about, you brought up David Mamet, and I got to ask you because – I sat down at a movie with David Mamet once. It's kind of like your Hall & Oates joke, except it's real,
right.
where where I was just too scared to talk to him. And he was like, literally, he was talking to me, and I'm like, And I walk away, and I go, and we're doing our show from Joe Montana's restaurant, and I say to Joe, you know, I saw David Mamet. He goes, oh, he's the nicest guy. He'd love you. And I'm like, yeah, I should talk to him. You do get to talk to David Mamet. He loves you. He puts you in his films. What's the connection there with you and Mamet?
Well, we went to college together, and he's, in addition to being a playwright and a screenwriter, is unbelievably silly and funny. And some of the jokes I do in my act were written by him.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'll tell you one. A couple of summers ago, I was on Martha's Vineyard, and I bumped into the former Vice President Al Gore.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was there, he was bitten by a tick. Mm-hmm. The tick came down with chronic fatigue syndrome. So he writes great jokes.
That's pretty good.
A lot of them show up in his movies, but sometimes they just show up on my desk.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, he's written some really sharp comedies. I love State and Maine.
Yeah.
And there's comedy in all his films. There's even, if it's not done straight for comedy, there's gallows humor in almost all his movies.
Right. He wrote a great book with Shel Silverstein called, is it called Safe for Orphans? Tested on Orphans. A really wonderful book with some of the darkest jokes you can imagine.
I didn't know that. And you know what I thought was interesting? I didn't know you were in Homicide.
Yeah, I
the Mamet movie.
I barely knew myself.
I didn't know that.
My father-in-law was in it.
Really?
My late father-in-law. Yeah. Because David liked him, and you know, he was in the rare position to offer a guy a part in a movie.
Yeah. I thought it was cool. I think, weren't you also on an episode of South Park, or am I imagining things? I remember South Park.
I was.
How did that come about?
That was just because we were on the same network.
Yeah.
And I played a shrink, and I'm killed by a snake almost immediately.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
Oh, those guys are fun.
And I also, yeah, they're really, I resented them for years. I thought of them as my younger and more successful siblings.
Yeah.
Who made more money selling sweatshirts than I did making TV.
Yeah.
I've really come to admire their work. They're really so good.
I was going to ask you, too, about Raising Dad, which is a sitcom I liked. It was only on for a short period of time. But this is a show that...
How old were you when you watched it?
Let's see. This was What was Raising Dad? About 2000? So I was 18, 17, 18. And I loved Bob Saget.
Yeah.
Like, and by the way, what's funny is people don't know that Kat Dennings and Brie Larson were on there. And look at them now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, wasn't Brie Larson a guest on your show?
She was a guest. No, she was a guest on my show. And we were eating ribs together, and she was... She was a sweetheart, and she was great in the movies she was in last year. She was in two great movies, Short Term 12 and Spectacular Now. And so this show, Raising Dad, I know you're an executive producer, and Andy Kindler's in it, who you guys are friends, and he's on your live.
Also Ron Lynch.
Right.
Ron Lynch played a role.
Right, but Andy's on the live Dr. Katz, too, right? Is he one of your patients? Yeah. So how much How much did you have to do with this show? Because I know you were an executive producer, and sometimes that means everything, and sometimes it means nothing.
No, I think most of the heavy lifting on that show was done by Tom Snyder, who has a talent that I don't have, which is organization.
Mm.
Because he assembled... We started out in his home in Cambridge recording with one artist, him and an intern. Who he taught how to edit audio, who recently created Bob's Burgers, his intern.
I love Bob's Burgers.
And he sounded a little bit like Al Franken. Do you get that?
Yeah, I can see that. Al Franken.
Yeah.
I love Al Franken, too.
Yeah. Now you're sounding like Jimmy Fallon, who loves everybody.
This
guy just killed a baby. We love this guy.
Yeah, I'm training for my future as the Tonight Show backup, yeah.
Right. I think I read somewhere that isn't that. Oh, no, that's not your ambition. That's somebody else's ambition.
No,
you're
no,
hosting
no.
The talk show.
Oh, no, 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 no. If they ever offered me that, I don't know. Could you see yourself ever doing like an everyday talk show? I feel like I'd go insane.
No, I couldn't do it. I think I could do it on the phone, maybe.
Yeah, you could dial it in.
I mean, if I had a show like the Letterman show, it would just the set would just be me and a telephone. But
you had me coughing on that one because I just visualized
that's a good,
it.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, I visualized it. No, I was thinking about this last year when we went to see Craig Ferguson.
I'm sorry, we just have to subdue my dog.
Oh no, go ahead.
Time of day. I think he's seeing wild turkeys. Can you sort of usher him out of the room and close the door? Thanks. I think we got rid of him.
I was curious when it comes to you, which you enjoy doing more, writing or acting?
Geez, I kind of like acting on camera.
Yeah.
And I love voiceover stuff because it's, you know, my home has a recording studio in it.
Yeah.
I'm recording this right now just in case one of us says something I want to hang on to.
Very good.
But, you know, it's also because I have MS, it's a less physical job working with my voice.
Working with your voice?
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking like, because for me as a writer, and then we just did our first like independent film. We just did a film and I directed and wrote it. I act in it, and I'm like, man, acting's easy compared to writing and directing. It's just so, oh, man, I don't know how like guys like Ed Burns and Woody Allen and those guys do it. I think
right.
it's really
also,
difficult.
It's also really lonely.
Yeah, right? It is.
What was the movie that you wrote and directed?
We just wrapped on our first film. It's called Bromance. It's a comedy. It's a comedy about this situation that happened in my life where I met a gay guy and we became like best friends because he would do all the things my straight friends wouldn't do, like go to museums and go to like do
right.
cultural things. And I've enhanced it, obviously, for the movie, enhanced it for comedy, but the straight guy becomes jealous of the gay guy having a boyfriend and taking the time from him. So it's a movie about sexuality and,
right.
and like, it's very, like, it comes from that same realm of, like, I think, oh, man, I don't even know what to compare it to. But, I mean, because I guess my influence are, I used to watch your show and The Critic on Comedy Central religiously.
Right.
And then I would watch things like Woody Allen's movies and Albert Brooks's movies. I wouldn't say I'm those guys at all, but in that realm, I wish I would be considered, yeah. That's the kind
of
movie.
Do you watch?
Yeah.
Do you watch Louis' show on FX?
I love Louis' show. I think it's great. I think it's great. And I even when the show doesn't hit, like I still think it's great because the best thing in the world about comedy to me is like when stuff doesn't hit, like it can cause conversation. So
right.
I'm just always I've been in love with comedy since a guy you worked with. You did a movie called Daddy Daycare with Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy's album Delirious. When I was like 7 or 8, I saw it on HBO for the first time. It was real late at night. We were having a sleepover.
Telling your parents.
Yeah, no, yeah. It was, yeah, we were having like one of those slumber parties where you're with your friends and you sneak on the HBO.
Right.
And man, I learned
right.
so many new words, and I loved Eddie Murphy
yeah.
after that.
Yeah, he was so good as a stand up. And working with him was fun, except for the fact that I thought, you know, he had all these stand ins.
Really?
And my eyes are not great to begin with, but I talked to so many of them thinking I was talking to Eddie Murphy.
Oh,
and when I finally got to talk to him, I kept bringing up people from his past that he didn't like because he was working in New York around, he was finishing up his career as a stand-up and moving to L.A.
Yeah.
around the time I started. So I would keep bringing up people that he didn't like.
Did you? But, I mean, I wouldn't ever ask you to say, but I always just imagine with him that you like, if you bring up SNL people, I've heard Eddie's like a really good guy, but like he has very, he's like a comedian. He's quirky. There's quirks.
And he also, he delivers his, you know, the day's shooting would begin when he arrived and would end when he left.
Yeah, I believe it.
And my worst experience on that shoot was working with, you know, they can only have kids for a certain number of hours a day.
Right.
Because of the union. So when the kids have to leave, they bring in midgets.
Is this real?
They really do.
This is great.
Yeah, they're standing for the kids. So I'm sitting outside one day, and this woman's making up my face, which I happen to love. It's really relaxing to have makeup applied.
Yeah.
And I feel this little hand on my shoulder, and I turn around and I say, "What the?" And it turns out it was a little kid who I terrified. And I said, "I thought you were a fucking midget." So I pissed off the kid, his mother. The small people.
Mm-hmm.
I just heard everybody in that one moment.
You said something that got me thinking too about when we were just shooting this movie. So this was my first time experiencing all this, really.
Right.
I was sitting in a makeup chair. Do you ever find, like, when I'm in the makeup chair, I feel like I have to do stand up for like the girl doing my makeup, like, and she's like, "Can you shut up?"
Yeah, that's so much. I work as hard to make the pharmacist at Walgreens laugh
me
as I
too.
Do to make an audience laugh.
Oh my God, me too. I don't know what's wrong with us. we need the
right.
insurance.
Yeah.
My mom always says I'm more fun with strangers and nicer to strangers than I am to my family. She goes, "Every stranger in town loves you." And I go, "Yeah, I try to make them laugh and I'm really nice and fun."
Yeah.
And she goes, "Around the house, you're a grump." And I'm like, "Yeah."
Hey, Aaron, can I try to describe the premise of your movie back to you?
Yeah, please.
So it's about a bromance.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy is a straight guy, one guy is gay, and the straight guy is becomes jealous of the attention that the gay guy is paying to other men.
Yeah.
The attention that other men are getting from him.
Yeah.
And let's say that's the A story.
Yes.
Just to pretend I'm a movie producer for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a B story?
Yes, the B story is he comes from this straight world, and his friends are all starting to suspect that he has deeper feelings for this gay man than he's leading on to. And it's about how these Chicago kind of like union working guys deal with their friend who may possibly be gay. The friends play a very large role in it. Yeah.
Kind of relationship you're describing is not dissimilar to the kind of relationship I have with Tom Snyder. We talk to each other about things that most guys don't talk to each other about.
Right.
And, you know, I have to say goodbye to somebody.
No, go ahead.
She's a filmmaker herself, so I turned up the volume so she could hear you talking.
Oh, okay. So, you were saying you and Tom Snyder have a very similar relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. We ask each other about real life stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way women might. Yeah.
But you don't always get to do that with all your friends. Like, you don't know which friends are going to be creeped out by it or weirded out by it.
Right. It's true.
I remember one time I was sitting with a friend of mine who I made immediately when I went to L.A. is Mike Binder. I don't know if you know Mike from the stand-up scene or from movies.
I know him from – I know one joke of his.
Yes.
Which is – I think it was about homelessness.
Okay.
And the joke was about, what about people who are summer homeless? I'm not saying it quite – but you get the idea.
That sounds like him too. I think my favorite.
And he also wasn't he creator of the Mind of the Married Man?
Mind of the Married Man. Yeah, that is Mike. Yeah, and he's just a really funny, sharp guy. But he's one of those guys like we would talk about everything under the sun. It was like it's a really deep, great friendship. But then one time I tried talking to him about, like, my nephew was just born, and I wanted to talk about like babies, and that was like the line for him. He's like, "Ah, what are we talking about that for?" And I'm like, "So for with everybody, you never know when it's like too weird or too deep or too personal or whatever." Right. And like the relationship you and Tom have, yeah, that's so important where you could just be open and honest about everything, because especially since you guys are writers and creators, you never know what you can mine from that material.
True.
Yeah, I feel like the brain is like an instrument, and you need to always be using it to like be good with it. So I feel like talking a lot is good.
Yes, I agree. You know, I think I'm going to be the last guy using the telephone.
The last what? Are you using a landline?
Yeah, I'm on a landline. I don't own a cell phone. I have a landline and a magic jack.
Wow.
No, I'm kidding about that.
I thought you were being serious about magic jack.
I do own a magic jack, and I still think there's something intriguing about it. But I'm not sure what that is yet.
Well, no, there is something intriguing about owning a magic jack. I think that has more to say about you than the magic jack itself. I still have a landline, though. I still have a landline. I use it occasionally.
Are you on it now?
Yeah, well, no, we're using internet right now. I'm using some sort of, like, internet wireless connection that creeps me out. And the NSA is listening to us, for sure. For sure.
Right.
1,000%.
Yeah.
What was
I have nothing to hide.
No. We're pretty out there and open. I mean, you have your own podcast as well, where you're pretty open and honest about your everyday whatevers. By the way,
I mean,
everyone can listen to your podcast at jonathankatz.com, correct? That's the go-to site.
It's called
site.
Hey, We're Back.
Yes. Hey, We're Back. Yes.
And it's really just whimsical. It's just whatever happens to strike me as funny that day.
Yep. And then I've been listening to that podcast. You've been doing it for over a year now, right? It's been...
I've been doing it since 2007.
Really? Really? I didn't even know it was that long.
I never really approached it as... I still don't approach it as a way to make money. It's just mostly for my own amusement.
Oh, a lot of people ask me, like, how you're going to make... Because everyone saw that Adam Carolla is making, like, boatloads of money off his podcast, whatever. And people are like, when are you going to make money off your podcast? Like my mother. those people. And I'm always just like, I don't think it would ever pay enough where I would want to sacrifice any of the creativity or anything I had that, I don't know, I just feel like it's so good now, you know?
Yeah, I think everything you do in comedy is practice or something you're going to do later.
Yeah, I agree. I think this podcast, it's definitely influential towards my writing. Like when I write TV and movie stuff, first, I'll give you a great example. It's given me an opportunity to meet a lot of people, like right now you and I are talking, that I would like to cast in a future movie, let's say, or whatever. And now it's like, okay, I talked to Jonathan Katz the other day. He's amazing. We got to put him in something. And then some people I'll be like, you know, his personality just didn't win me over. I don't know if we could work together.
I got cast in a movie by Nora Ephron, and I got fired because I was very charming during our interview.
Yeah.
And then it was shot in Toronto, and then she discovered I don't know how to act.
Which movie of hers was it?
It's a movie with Julie Kavner. Wait, is she the one from The Simpsons?
Oh, I love Julie Kavner. Yeah, that's the stand-up movie, wasn't it? The one where she plays a stand-up comedian?
Right. Yeah, and I played her ex-husband. And in when you get fired from a movie, they don't say you're fired. They say, we've decided to go in another direction.
Yeah.
And the direction they went in was a guy who looked exactly like me, but he knew how to act.
Do you remember who the guy is?
I don't.
I'm going to have to look that
up. Just
a bald
guy who was probably living in Toronto.
Yeah, right. They just found a bald guy with like a 101 course of acting experience.
Right. But he was actually pretty good. But the movie, you know, she did write some wonderful movies.
Yeah.
And there were parts about that movie that I found really charming. And it also, introduced Gabby Hoffman to the world.
Yeah, she's great. Gabby Hoffman's outstanding. Great actress.
Yeah.
She's on that show Transparent right now.
Did you see her on Louis' show?
Yes, yes. And then I was just watching her on Transparent, and I'm like, you know, and those are great shows. But even when she does bad stuff, she makes it good. She's just that good. So,
yeah,
you know,
she really is.
I'm trying to think what movie it was that was with Julie Kavner. What's the movie?
Right. And also Joy Behar put a small role in it.
That's right. This is going to bother
me. Actress named Samantha Mathis, maybe?
Samantha Mathis. Yeah, it was This Is My Life is the movie.
Right.
And I'm trying to find who would have played the bald ex-husband.
I hate him.
Yeah, we're not fans.
You know what's good? I still get residuals from it, even though I didn't appear in the movie.
Well, they got to pay you because
the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah, the Guild, right? Which, by the way, I've fought with people about this. Is it just me or does the Writers Guild kind of suck? Are we allowed to talk about that? I don't even know if we're allowed to talk about that.
Yeah, I think we. I believe very strongly in people getting paid for the work they do.
I agree. But even nowadays, I think you know this. I think you've probably had talks with people about this. People are just giving up free rewrites all the time anyways. I mean, studios are asking you to do free rewrites all the time. They don't care about the guild rules, and the guild doesn't really...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they go to bat for everybody. I mean, I'll tell you why I bring
this
up.
I'll tell you another David Mamet joke about... Because people, when he first started, would ask him to write stuff on spec.
Yeah.
And he said, what's that monument somewhere with all the presidents on it?
Mount Rushmore?
Yeah. He said the guys who did Mount Rushmore did it on spec. but he says it funnier.
And
he has a great joke.
That's good.
He has a great joke in the movie Heist, which is they say that the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah.
At least it's paved.
Yeah. I love Heist. Heist is one of my favorites of his. I thought Delroy Lindo, especially, and Danny DeVito, were phenomenal in that film. The reason I was bringing up the Writers Guild, though, is I'm literally... So I sold this show earlier this year that I'm working on now, I'm writing, and I got the Writers Guild papers in front of me, and they keep bothering me about when I'm going to join. And I'm staring at these things, and I know at some point I'm going to probably have to join because it's just fucked up the way it all works, but I'm going through the papers, and I'm like, I don't know. Why am I paying this kind of money?
Do you have a really good friend who's a member of the Guild?
I have a lot of friends that are members of the Guild.
Because they used to Taft-Hartley you for the first job.
Yeah.
You weren't obligated to join.
I think they're making me join. I could be wrong, but... It feels that way. I'm kind of like, eh.
And also, is this a for theatrical release or is it
no,
the web?
The one I sold is for television. That's for
TV. Yes. So
yeah.
So you're gonna have to join the guild.
Yep. Yeah. That's
because if it was for the web, then there's this thing called New Media, which can protect you in some way.
We've been using New Media for when we do films and stuff because it's just like, well, you don't even know where this is going to end up. You don't have a distributor. You don't.
Right.
Have, you know, like so, just use New Media, and there's really no guidelines for New Media either. They need to start that. Because is Netflix and Amazon under New Media? You think?
I don't know if they are. They might be in their own category because it's such a wide distribution.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated to me which one they would be under because they could fidget some rules if they're in new media. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
New
media, you're not obligated to pay anybody anything.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Right. I went into the rules of new media and it literally says, I'm not kidding about this. It says something like coming soon, ..
Right.
I'm like, oh, that's great. That's fantastic. Yeah. This is the guild they want me to join. They have coming soon on their website.
But I got into the guild through David Mamet when we worked on a sitcom together called Smashville, which never aired. And then again, I got a credit through the guild in House of Games as a a story credit.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you got a story credit for House of Games.
Yeah, and it was really, it was more like I was the guy getting coffee for David while he wrote the movie.
That's great.
Because,
that's great.
I mean, it was, we did spend a lot of time, David and I, in places where you can either con people or get conned.
Yeah.
Pool halls and ping pong parlors where I was particularly good. I was a former New York State champion.
See, I'm a billiards guy. I'm a billiards guy. You're a ping pong guy.
Are you?
Yeah, you're a ping pong
yeah.
guy. Okay, okay.
And what's your game of choice in billiards?
Oh, I mean, just regular eight balls, fine. I mean,
yeah.
I love the professionals, and I'm not a professional. And I have all my friends that are pros, and they can do all the trick moves and everything.
Right.
I'm just a hustler. I'm just let's put money on the table, and by luck, I win
yeah.
like a good amount of time.
Do you know Dom Irrera?
Yeah, I know Dom. Dom is a really funny guy. For people that don't know Dom, he does
yeah.
stand up. He was just in town in Chicago doing stand up.
Yeah, he's great. And we once played pool, and I told him, Dom, I'm going to spot you 40 balls in a game to 50.
Oh, wow.
And I caught him at around 42. Not because he wasn't good, but I had psyched him out.
Really? That's what I do. I do the shit talking.
Right. Right.
But I try to be like classier about the shit talking. Like I'm not like the guy you see in the movies. I'm like, you know, I'll just talk your ear off. I'll be like, so hey, how you doing?
Right. Yeah. As you're about to make contact with the cue ball.
Right, right, right. You have it timed down and everything.
Right.
That's great. When you did
right.
Bob's Burgers, did you watch Bob's Burgers before you did it, or did you just get offered it and do it? Because I love Bob's Burgers. I think it's great.
I seen some of it, and I saw the script, and like every other actor, I memorized my lines.
Yeah.
And I saw how many there were.
Yeah.
But, you know, Lauren Bouchard is such a great guy, and I've been working with him for so many years on Dr. Katz.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's the other thing about Tom, is that he was very good at replicating teams. Like the original team I described to you was just one artist, one him and an audio editor.
Yeah.
And then when the show got picked up by Comedy Central for the first season, we needed two teams. And then we got an order for 22 ultimately, and he had about 150 people working on the show, and he trained them all.
Yeah,
in audio editing, and
so
he has a talent for that.
And when you're running a show, I don't think people know how much time that takes up. As a showrunner, like how much time do you think you and Tom don't have when you're running a show? How many hours a week would you say that is?
That we don't have?
Yeah, how many hours a week do you have?
Oh, it's, you know, it depends on your ability to stop working.
Yeah.
Because, and messy when your work is also fun.
Yes, yeah.
Like
the other thing is...
I love editing audio.
Oh, well, that's good. Because
but
the other thing
really
for me is,
exhausting.
Don't you get, like, do you feel like, though, when you're writing, especially when you're creating, that sometimes it's, like, not worth it to keep working? That's why I find the whole process kind of crazy, that they force these writers to, like, write and write and write. Because some of it's going to be crap because you're just not inspired or motivated at the time.
Right.
I mean, even when you love something. So did you ever find when you're writing Dr. Katz that, like, you were like, okay, we need to take a break, even though we could write. We need to go somewhere, go do something. I need to get inspired.
You know, Dr. Katz, the process was different than a traditional sitcom. It started out with just me and Tom going out to lunch, and he would create an outline for an episode,
mm-hmm.
and then we would try to make it smaller and smaller and smaller, mm-hmm. Reducing the number of scenes, and I would be sitting there essentially making jokes that he would plug into each scene. And, you know, unlike a lot of other people, he wouldn't hang us out to dry in the booth. You know, some people will let you go until you can no longer breathe.
Yeah, yeah.
So when he had what he wanted, you'd say, okay, that's it for now.
Well, that's good.
Because editing, I mean, directing animation is a totally different skill than directing live action. And he's just good at it.
Yeah, I don't know if I could direct animation. I mean, I look at it and I'm like, I know nothing about it. It's funny that you're on and we were talking about Dr. Katz because you were talking about, you know, making money off of podcasting. The one idea we did have, because I love your show so much, is like, well, why don't you just do Dr. Katz as like a podcast and we can have it animated and do stuff like that. And that was an idea we came really close to doing. But I mean, yeah, right. I mean, but I know nothing about animation. That was the problem. You'd have to hire like a really good animator yeah. and you'd have to have someone
expensive.
Do it.
I mean, yeah. animation is more expensive than live action often.
Yeah, I've heard that. And what I hear they're doing now is they're shipping it all to like the Philippines or Korea or something.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And they'll do the animation
well,
there.
I work, when I do animation, I work with a small team of well, most of them are ISIS fighters.
Yeah.
In Syria. So they're really, I mean, they're on a very, they turn it around very quickly because they know they might die that day.
What scares you more, ISIS or Ebola?
Let me see. I would say more for the bees than either. I'm allergic to bees.
Oh, wow. You're really allergic to bees?
Yeah.
Wow.
And my son-in-law just sent me a video about, I guess they're called Africanized bees. I guess they killed some people in near Tucson recently.
Oh, jeez. Oh, I read a story about some guy in a house or whatever, and there was like 8,000 bees or whatever.
Yeah.
I read that story.
Yeah,
creeping out.
And they'll track you for miles. And if you jump in the water, they'll wait until you have to come up to sting you.
Oh, no. Yeah, they said something. Why did they say the bees were attracted to him? I remember this story. They said something about, there was the loud noises in the house. He was working on the house, drilling or doing something in the house.
Oh, room. And it sounded like a queen bee a bit.
Yeah. And they said it made the bees think that he was like this crazy bee. And you're right. Bees are scary. Bees are really scary. I think Ebola doesn't really scare me as much as just germs in general. I'm not like a typical germaphobe, but I don't like them.
Right.
I get kind of germaphobic.
You know, there are some things that sound perverse that are not really.
Like what?
Like a germaphobe or an audiophile.
Yeah, audiophile's a good one. Yeah.
They just sound perverse. I think the thing that scares me the most is the flesh-eating virus.
Oh.
Because, you know, there are so many people to lose weight.
Right.
And I just know somebody's going to try that.
I'm trying to think of, like, what my favorite, like, dirty word that's not dirty is. I think, like, dream hole. I remember someone said dream hole to me once, and I go, that can't be a word. And then it was. And then I'm like, whatever. It's another good one. I'm trying to think. Now you got me. Musky. Musky is always a word that I'm like, that sounds dirty.
Yeah, and John Benjamin makes up the best euphemisms for gay men.
Yeah,
I think one of them is let's just say he has mice in the attic. things that mean nothing.
No, they mean nothing, but he makes it sound like.
Yeah. Yeah.
For those that are listening, John Benjamin plays your son on Dr. Katz.
On Dr. Katz, and also is the voice of Archer and the voice of Bob on Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, he's gone places. He's doing some things. And Silverman,
just great.
Laura Silverman played your shrink. I mean, your receptionist on the show.
Receptionist, yeah, and she's also in the live show.
Yeah, in the live show is B.J. Novak, Eugene Merman, and Andy Kindler, and. Andy, I know just from watching Andy do interviews and stuff, he's got to have a ton to tell you in the live show. He's a mess.
My favorite moment with him in San Francisco was when I said to him, you know, because he was talking about the pressure he felt as a performer.
Yeah.
And I think the phrase I said was, you know, can't be easy being you. And he said, And he said, "What? That's how you're going to leave it? You're going to send me out into the night? Can I draw that on a quilt or something?" but he's just wonderful. He's really so good.
It was so funny. I was talking to two bouncers yesterday outside of a gay club. This is, swear to God, the truth. And they go, "What'd you do today, Matt?" And I go, "Oh, you know, I wrote a little and I interviewed Alf. I interviewed Alf yesterday." And they go, "Oh, you interviewed Alf?" I go, "Yeah, I'm taping shows for next week." And they go, "Oh, who else do you got?" And I go, "Well, I'm interviewing Jonathan Katz. You guys are a little young for this. You probably don't know about Dr. Katz." And these two bouncers outside this gay club are like, "That's my favorite show ever.
You know,
I love
weird.
Dr.
Really
Katz."
Really had a very large gay male following. And also mothers and daughters watched it, fathers and sons.
Lumberjacks.
They're very odd. What's that?
Lumberjacks. You have everybody.
Yeah, lumberjacks. Yeah. That's down my rear is bit. Do you know that?
No, I don't know that one.
Oh, the bit is about, they always talk about guys turning gay. What does that mean? One day he's a lumberjack, and he comes back the next day and says, "Oh, this is too busy. I can't do a gay voice. Can I do this voice, or I can say, well, the whole goddamn thing is theater." That's my vocal range.
Is that like your somewhat Southern accent? Like, we can't totally nail the dialect, but we know it's Southern.
Right. Right.
That's great.
Hey, let me ask you a question.
I'm
curious about the technology you're using.
Yeah.
It's a voice over internet protocol.
I'm using, right now, we're using an Allen and Heath soundboard and then a mixer.
Which is a great board.
I love it. And then, we got I don't even know what kind of microphones they are, but I love them. And then what I do basically is I will call Blog Talk Radio via Skype, and then you get the number, you call in. It's kind of like our intermediary is the Skype. So so that's what we're using right now is Skype. And I mean, it's hit or miss. I mean, some nights when traffic's really busy, I love that expression too about the web, traffic.
Yeah.
But when traffic's really busy, because I just imagine like a million fucking people on the road. But when traffic's busy, it could cut out. And I'll, like, lose an interview, like, halfway through. And it's kind of become, like, a running gag where it's, like, at what point is in the interview am I going to have to call the person back? And that's happened a million times. But
I don't like to be presumptuous.
Yeah, go ahead.
But you sound like a guy with a pretty good bandwidth.
I feel like I got good bandwidth. I feel like it.
Yeah.
Do you use GarageBand?
I think you can't say the wrong person.
Do you use GarageBand to record or what?
No, I use something called Reaper, an audio.
Is it any good?
It's a.
You like it?
Reaper, yeah. R-E-A-P-E-R.
Okay.
It's kind of like the poor man's Pro Tools.
Oh, okay.
But it's really powerful. I mean, you could do a million things with it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so you use Reaper. I'm going to try that. So you record all your stuff on Reaper. And, I record in GarageBand, and then I fiddle with it afterwards, and it sounds great.
Right.
With Reaper, and you said you like doing audio editing, so I'm assuming you're doing this by yourself when you do your podcast, no?
Yeah. I mean, I do have an assistant who happens to be have a background in audio engineering.
Okay.
And worked at Soup to Nuts for a while. Where
oh, wow. You got pros.
And continue to make animated shows.
I like how it says on Reaper's homepage, too. This must be why you love this program. It says what it is, and then under purchase, it says cost:not so much. I go, oh, that's a Jonathan Katz joke.
But if you're the
not
kind
so
of guy
much.
Who likes to call tech support, it's not for you.
Oh, really? No.
Yeah.
Oh God, I hate tech support. Hey, is someone we mutually know who I know must love you is Craig Bierko.
Oh, that's so funny you mentioned him because he was in this Larry David movie called Sour Grapes.
Sour Grapes, yes. With him and Stephen Weber.
I was offered a part in that movie by Larry David, who was married to my ex manager, Lori David.
Yep.
Who was Lori Leonard at the time. And the part calls for me sitting in my underwear in a doctor's office. And my modesty would not permit me to do that. And you think about a guy like Louis C.K. who is so comfortable with his body.
Oh, yeah. I got naked in this this movie we just did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I got to tell you, like, I don't know. I just didn't think about it. I mean, I know I don't have a great body. I know I just don't care. But yeah, I see guys like Louis C.K., and I'm like, well, who the fuck cares?
Yeah, and there's this club where I do a show once a month called Improv Boston.
Yeah.
Cambridge Dick Show is on November 2nd. And they do a naked comedy night once a week.
Really?
I get up and perform naked.
People really do?
Yeah, and I can't imagine anything. It's so naked all by itself doing stand-up.
Is that like a college town thing, maybe?
Maybe.
Like, are there college kids that go up there? Because I can't see, like, professional comedians being like, all right, let's get naked. Let's do this thing. Like, Ray Romano's not doing naked night.
No. You know who also was great on Dr. Katz was Kathy Griffin.
Yeah, Kathy Griffin. She's underrated, I feel. Even though she's, like, so huge, I still feel like as like, a performer, she's kind of underrated. I don't know. That sounds weird.
Yeah.
But I just – you think about it, and, like, her two episodes on Seinfeld, her episode on your show, like, anytime she plays a version of herself on someone else's shows, she stands out huge.
Yeah. Yeah, she was really so comfortable in portraying herself, which she should be. Who
right.
better? So naturally. And she was good company, and I think, you know, somehow or other, she's gotten – her persona has changed over the years.
Yeah.
Where she has more success bad-mouthing people than being a comedian.
Yeah.
And she does it in a very funny way.
No. Did you ever hear a bit about Steven Spielberg?
No.
Like, she'll tell bits now that are, like, about people, but, like, she did this bit about how she insulted Spielberg because she said Dakota Fanning had, like, a drug problem or something, and they had a movie coming out with Dakota Fanning, and Steven
right.
was really mad. And she went backstage to Jerry Seinfeld's show at Caesar's Palace, and the only two people backstage were her and Steven Spielberg. And she tells this funny story about having to encounter
right.
Steven Spielberg. Those are the kind of stories that Kathy does that I, like, really enjoy. But, yeah, people seem to forget before she had this, like, life on the D-list or whatever, she used to do stand-up that was just about, like, her mother and, like, you know, her life. And she was really good. Really good. She still is. But it was a different kind of
yeah.
comedy. You watch her career because she's so open about her life. Like, her life
right.
is her career. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I met Spielberg in L.A. once, and Jeffrey Katzenberg. Tom and I did a show for DreamWorks, and we do all the animation in Massachusetts. We do the voices in Korea.
Yeah.
And his response was, "We do a lot of work there as well."
He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that is like, "Oh, people are going to be joking with me. Let's." Lighten up.
Yeah. So he's probably not a humorless guy, but
no.
Ready for it.
But I mean, I've seen his comedies too, so it's kind of like, well, it wouldn't hurt you, Stephen, if you if you opened up a little bit. What I was going to ask you too is who did Dr. Katz you think the most out of any comedian? Probably Dom, right?
Yeah, Dom, and then maybe
Ray Romano was
Ray,
on a lot. Yeah,
Ray was on a lot of times. Trying to think, Andy was on quite a bit.
Dave Attell was on a few times, right?
Oh, Dave Attell was great on that show.
Dave
Attell was so good, and also Dave Chappelle did a great job on the show. And I found an old video, a kind of an archivist, and Dave Chappelle used to have a talk show late at night, and I was one of his first guests.
Really, I didn't know Dave had a talk show on VH1 or something. Is that where it was?
Oh, it might have been. You might be right about that.
Actually,
or maybe MTV.
Yeah, I think I may have remembered this. Yeah. I didn't.
It's like on after other talk shows. But it didn't occur to me that he was the funny guy then.
Yeah.
I was sort of taken with myself in the 90s.
Yeah, who else do I remember seeing on your show? Because you introduce people to a lot of comedians, too, which is what I loved about your show. I remember, I never listened to one of Stephen Wright's albums until I saw Stephen on your show.
Oh, my God, he was so perfect for the show.
Oh, so perfect. So perfect.
Also, Richard Lewis called me. I called him, and he said, it seems like kind of an obvious choice.
I love Richard Lewis. Sandra Bernhard, I love, and I know she did an episode of your show.
Great.
She's great.
She was great.
She's great. Man, who else was on?
Margaret Cho is very funny.
Oh, my God. She is so funny. I hope they give her another special. I got to see her recent stuff. That's the only problem with comedians is it. I feel like there was a boom around the time of Dr. Katz. Like, there was this big comedy boom. And
of the 90s.
Yeah, and I feel like the last 10 years, there's like 5-6 stand-ups, and then that's it. Like, they get promoted, they get put on HBO, whatever, and then that's it. That's the ball game. And so the 90s
for me was
a great time.
Dana Carvey describes these days as sort of like a boom of sketch comedy. More than stand-up.
Yeah, I could kind of see what he's saying there. Yeah, I agree. And then there's just not as many of those guys like Stephen Wright out there anymore, or David Cross, or Wanda Sykes, who's amazing. Wanda's great. She was on your show.
She was great on the show. She did our show.
Do you think
she also did another show with Tom called Hey Moni.
Oh, I didn't know that. Do you think we could ever, like, revive Dr. Katz, other than, by the way, October 21st, Dr. Katz Live, via digital audio on iTunes and Amazon? But is there, do you think, a place in this current environment to revive Dr. Katz?
I honestly can't answer that one. Hmm. And also, I don't have the rights to do it.
Oh, okay.
You know, comedy.
Well, it would
Central
have to be Comedy Central that would come to you and be like, "Hey, let's do it again."
Yeah, well, they did. They did. I mean, this is sort of like telling tales out of school. Is that an expression people still use?
Yeah, I use it. I also say I'll meet you by the bike rack at 3 o'clock when I want to fight people. So I may be the wrong guy.
They offered us a deal. We'll be making short episodes of the web.
Like webisodes, yeah.
Yeah, and they kind of strung us along for a year until their legal department said, "You can't do it. We're not going to expose ourselves."
Not going to expose ourselves. Is that not your favorite legal term ever? Speaking of dirty terms.
Yeah, that's right.
We're not going to expose ourselves.
Right.
I hear that like all the time with legal stuff, and I'm like, oh God, can you come up with a less vague general response?
Well, what about approaching an attractive woman at a bar and saying, "I'd like to indemnify you"?
Yeah, right. That's good. That's good. You know what my new pickup line is, and it actually works, and you don't need to use this ever, but this is my new line. Is I've been walking up to women and gentlemen. I'll just creep out everybody, and I'll be like, if they start talking to me, I'm like, "You're going to need to take off your shirt so I know if you're wearing a wire or not." And I go, man,
that's great.
It's great, right? Because I'm Italian, and I'm like, I'll be like, I'm in the FBI here.
It's much better than mine, which is, "When are you going to make me a grandfather?"
That's good, too, though. See, but the problem with having a great pickup line is, if you're not good after that, it's all downhill.
And also, if you have a wife, it's not great.
No. It's not. I guess I'll wrap up with this. I wanted to ask you about why Massachusetts over California, or New York? Because everyone always asks me why I came back from L.A. to make movies, and I go, I really want to make movies in Chicago. David Mamet, who we've been talking about, did a lot in Chicago, and I kind of look up to the guy.
Theater.
Yeah, and I kind of look up to the guy, and I would like to aspire to make movies the size of his, and you know, so why Massachusetts?
Well, my wife grew up here.
Mm-hmm.
We were living in New York, and when our daughter turned 2.5, I didn't really seem like a good place to raise a child, so we moved back to Massachusetts, where she grew up, where her parents were living, where her sister still lives, my brother-in-law. So we had a I hate this term, a support system.
Yeah.
It's almost hate that as much as a comfort zone.
But comfort zone's good.
Rita Rudner was great. Rita Rudner was great at wordplay when she was when I first met her, and probably still is. And she was she's somebody who when I worked with her for 3 weeks in the South.
Yeah.
And I was so excited the night she asked me my opinion of her joke. It was like appearing on The Tonight Show. And then I realized she asked the cab driver. She asked anyone we bumped into. Because she was just constantly working on jokes.
Oh, man.
And good. Really good at it.
No, she's great. She's great. I find that interesting when people ask your opinion. Like, I'm the same way. I'm like, you want my opinion? Oh. I'm so overwhelmed. I'm so overwhelmed. And then I take it like too seriously and too far. I remember when I was single, well, I am single, but when I was single and doing stand-up, anytime a woman would ask me, like, they'd be like, or when a woman comes up to you and says, I love your joke. And it could just be complete bullshit. Like, they could just be being nice, whatever. But you're not thinking that way because you're like a single man doing stand-up. You're like, I'm going to do that joke all the time. Forgetting that it completely bombed. And she only said that to be nice. So it bombs every
right.
time, and you're like, I don't care because she loved that joke.
Right.
Oh, man. Being a man
is
stupid.
Yeah, my wife is my censor. I shall not want.
Oh, so she's kind of like your, lets you know when you're okay and when you're not?
Well, this is how it works with me and my wife. Sweetie, do you think it would be yes. I don't even have to finish the word inappropriate.
Where do you get to be inappropriate now that you're a father, you have kids, all this? Do you get to be inappropriate anymore?
Yeah, I have to go out looking for people in the street. I usually say to people, to strangers, have you seen anybody fitting my description?
That's good. That's it. See, we like creeping people out. I like that.
Yeah.
Well,
hey, listen, such a pleasure talking to you. I think
You too. I really
say I'm running out of tape, but we don't use tape anymore.
No. But I really had a great time, and I'd love to have you on again next time you have stuff to promote. And
oh, sure. And the next, if I think of a scenario, I'll call you and see if you can portray the guy who. Have you ever seen this ad on TV? 1-800-INVENT-HELP.
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's a place for amateur inventors to call. So I would call you and I would tell you about an idea I have, and ultimately I'd be describing a doorknob that I've invented. But if I think of some reason to call you, I'll do it.
You can call me whenever you want. And Dr. Katz Live is going to be on digital audio on iTunes. Digital audio. What a weird word. What's wrong with audio? How is it digital? I don't know. But
yeah.
Digital.
It's a digital release as opposed to a physical release.
All right. I guess that makes sense. It's called digital now. All right. iTunes, Amazon, and all digital retailers, October 21st. You can check out his podcast, Hey, We Are Back, and that's on your website, jonathankatz.com. And is Explosion
and
Bus still on
the air? And you can
see
me live on November 2nd.
And that's right, in Cambridge, right, at the Improv.
We're at Improv Boston.
I got to come visit Boston. I've never been to Massachusetts.
You'd like it.
Yeah, I feel like I'd want to shoot a movie there. Like, I feel like as soon as I get in, especially like Cambridge or somewhere so historic, I feel like I'm just going to have a million ideas. I'm like, I want to do a movie here.
Oh, yeah. It looks like places that are in Europe or.
Yeah.
You know, I always think that every movie that's shot in Hollywood is shot there because somebody can. Lives 5 minutes away.
Yeah, it's either that or it's going to be cheaper. Those are my two opinions when they shoot a movie in Hollywood. I go, they were too cheap, or Tom Hanks lives down the block, and it's the only way he would do the movie. I mean, I've had scripts. Have you ever had scripts where people are like, when you get the location note, where they're like, it doesn't have to be set in blah, 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 and you know what they mean is, can we do it in L.A.?
Right. Can I walk there?
Right. I'm like, because for me, it's like, why wouldn't you? I remember when we're doing this TV show, I turned in this pilot and they go, And they go, and we'll think about the Chicago thing. I go, well, it's in the script. What are you going to think about? And why do you got to think about it? It's Chicago. Who cares? Like, they're like, well, maybe we want to do it in L.A.
Chicago is such a great location.
I think so.
And you know who else grew up in Chicago? It's this casting director, Ellen Lewis.
Oh, no, I don't know.
Cast all of Scorsese's films.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'd have to meet them. I mean, oof, if I can get into a Scorsese movie.
You know, there's a school in Chicago called Parker.
Okay.
It's a private school.
Okay.
And David and a bunch of other friends of mine went there.
Oh, wow.
Ellen Lewis.
Yeah, because it's David's work in Chicago. And Joe Mantegna, when we went out to L.A., I did my show for Mantegna's, and I love Joe. And, like, I love being from Chicago. I really want to come back here and shoot my first movie, and I want to shoot all my movies if I can in Chicago. I think it's an underrated city when it comes to film, and I think that there's no one big indie-wise from here other than Swanberg, and David, of course, has moved on, and he's doing big movies now and stuff.
Right.
Is there anything coming up for you or David that you know about, like film or TV-wise?
Well, you know, it's weird. I shot this movie called The Truth About Lies.
Okay.
About a year ago. And I went to a screening in New York, and that's the last I've heard of it.
Really?
I played a cowboy. I mean, a shrink.
I was going to say, I'm waiting for that one.
It was a romantic comedy, and I'm surprised it hasn't had a theatrical release. It was pretty good. And then, I mean, the other stuff I have going on is just in pre-production.
Yeah.
Which is where I live.
Yeah, I was going to, are you going to maybe direct a movie? Do you have any interest in stuff like that?
No, but there are two guys named Steve and Joel Levinson who are making a documentary about me, which is kind of cool.
Wow. Is that weird for you, though, too? Like, are you kind of like, they're making a doc? How much access are you giving them, I guess? Is it, like, scripted out, like they know what they need from you, when they need from you? Are they following you around or what?
I think it's going to be a little bit of each. I mean, they're going to come to Boston, sort of trail me for a couple of days, and then they're going to talk to people about me who have worked with me, people who live in L.A. and people who live in New York, and one guy in Chicago.
That's just nuts to me, though, a documentary about you. Like, if someone was like, we want to do a documentary about you, and it's in 20 years or whatever, I'm like, that's weird for me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's kind of cool, too. It's cool, though. It's cool.
Yeah.
They're going to be at your podcast, probably. They're going to be doing everything with you. They'll be, hey, go for it. I'll watch it. I'm going to watch it.
Well,
thank you so much. No, thank you. I had a blast.
Okay.
We'll talk soon, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Take care. Bye-bye.